Today's operation is the frustration of Vietnam in miniature.
I shall not see.
The worst area we've been in since I've been in Vietnam. Awful sick, and I'll be so glad to go home.
And I will not accept.
As men clamored over one another, pushing aside women and children in their panic-stricken fury, members of the air crew dragged them onto the plane, trying to fill it as fast as possible.
The nomination of my party for another term as your president.
For it seems now more certain than ever that the bloody experience of Vietnam is to end in a stalemate.
This is Dr. Stephen Nurse. These episodes of Is Abled focus on the brave men and women who fought in the Vietnam War, not the politics that surrounded the war. This is The War in Vietnam, Part 2. Those who were there are still fighting because the jungle changes a man. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our third set of episodes. This is on the war in Vietnam, called the 52-year-long war. And again, I want to remind people the reason that we call that is that it's not 52 years since the annual official closing of the war, which was April 30th, 1975. But you're going to start counting the years back. But the reason it is the 52, we call it the 52-year war, because one of the vets that I interviewed earlier, when I was asking him some questions, he said that for him, and he's had some problems with Agent Orange and a number of things, that for him it was a 52-year war, and he's still fighting it. And so what we've tried to do in this series is to get all aspects of this covered. We're looking at vets. We interviewed and looked at the donut dollies. I don't know if everybody knows about that, but that's one of our shows. And so today we're going to interview a gentleman. His name is Joel Kinney, and he is lives in Salem, Oregon, capital of Oregon. And the reason that I'm interviewing Joel is that one of the vets that lives here on the island on Vashon asked me to contact him. And Joel runs, he has a real-time job where he works with music and setting up speakers for big events and that kind of thing. I think that pretty much describes it. And sound systems. And as another component of his life, he has organized a group that does reenactments of wars in battles in Vietnam. Similar, I would assume, to like when we do reenactments of Civil War battles, we do reenactments of Revolutionary War battles. So, Joel, why don't you, you're the expert on this, not me. Why don't you tell me about your organization and what it does and when you do this, all the who, what, why, and where?
Thank you. Let me say thank you so much for having me. It's a great privilege and an honor, and I really, really appreciate it. And it's the least I can do to say thank you.
Well, when I come down to Salem, you can buy me a beer.
Yeah, that sounds good, man. We're on. So organization is the Pacific Northwest Historical Group, and founded it in 1999. And, I'm a son of two veterans, both of which were in during and right before the end of Vietnam. And of course they served full careers long after that. They both retired. My mom and my dad both retired, after 1995. But I remember Vietnam like it was yesterday. I'm 54 years old. I was born in 1967. And I remember Dad got deployed, was going to get deployed. His National Guard unit was going to go to Vietnam in 70. Nixon was trying to figure out if he was going to, in 69, 70, Nixon was trying to figure out if he was going to have National Guard units supplement, and they were going to lay off on the draft or what they were going to do. And my dad's guard unit got called up, and they went to Fort Lewis. They got all their inoculations and training. And next thing I knew, it was very real. My father was going to go to Vietnam. I was just a young child, but I remember being so moved by the war, seeing it on TV. Even at 4 or 5 years old, I knew it wasn't the Green Berets. I knew it wasn't, Kelly Ceros or Guns of Navarone. I knew it was something very unique.
You know, I was just going to say, in 1966, the number one song in United States was The Battle of the Green Berets by Sergeant Barry Sadler. And
Sadler, right.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because I graduated in 66, and at the same time, there were a lot of people that were in the National Guard at that time that thought, this is a way of maybe not having to go. A good number of my friends went. Go ahead. Sorry, just a little sneeze there. So go
ahead. Yeah, of course.
And talk right into your cell phone there.
Yeah, of course. So what I found was, growing up during the war, having it be very real, and then of course having my stepdad was a Vietnam vet. My parents divorced after that, in the 70s, and then my mom got remarried in the 80s to a guy who was a Vietnam veteran. And he struggled with PTSD, and I remember going through all of his old stuff. He was still in the National Guard, actually. He was still a career soldier after the war, and I remember going through his photo albums and being completely moved by it and sucked in, and it, of course, took me back to my childhood. So, just personally speaking, I had this sort of mission in my life, this fascination with not only the period and the era, but to kind of celebrate those soldiers, airmen, nurses, Marines in Vietnam, never got a chance to really be celebrated. And I found, I met some guys that were doing World War II reenactments, and then I was suddenly thinking, wait a second, why are we not doing this for the Vietnam vets? Why are we not doing this for the Vietnam War? And because there just wasn't any groups doing it. And I grabbed a bunch of guys that did World War II reenacting, and of course many of those had done Civil War reenacting. World War II reenacting was huge after Saving Private Ryan came out. It blew up.
Right, and that was really I was just going to say, that was really one of those first war movies that the way it started... very poignant with the old Vietnam, or the old World War II vet going to the cemetery, with the family and everything.
Yes.
And then pretty much everybody said it sounded and felt like when they landed, for D-Day, that it was pretty authentic. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no question. It was shocking, no question. I saw it in about the 10th row in dead center, and it just rattled you watching those opening scenes, the beach scenes in Saving Private Ryan, no question. It's funny, speaking about films really quickly, it wasn't until Forrest Gump came out. It's funny, all the way across the board, I talked to so many Vietnam vets, and many of them say, for combat, the best Vietnam movie to that point was the combat scenes in Forrest Gump, with all the tracer fire and the explosions and the confusion, and you didn't see the enemy, And there was no heroics. It was blood and in the mud. And that scene, really, that movie, I believe, came out before Saving Private Ryan, and I think that movie really set the tone for those combat scenes with the tracers and the confusion and all of that. But anyway, that's a whole other topic. But I just, leading into this, I really felt compelled to to do something to honor those Vietnam veterans. And so I grabbed all these buddies that did World War II with, and we put this group together. And, of course, we meticulously researched the unit that we do. We researched the periods and all of that. We're all historians. And, of course, getting the details right, it just didn't feel like we were doing it justice if we didn't get the details right. So that came out of hours and hours and hours and weeks and years of interviews with Vietnam vets, the way they wore their stuff, the way they carried it, what they felt, how they acted, what did they do. And so with that, and then I had half my guys were prior service, and this is pre Gulf War, Gulf War II. This is pre Afghanistan, but a bunch of the guys had served, you know, peacetime. A couple of them had been in the first one, Gulf War, and we just built a group, and it kind of blew up. And then it got. Then what we found was we have all these new kids coming in the early 2000s, and you know, 9-1-1 hit. Next thing I know, we've got half of our guys are going into the service to go to Iraq and Afghanistan and fight that second war, and they came back. And when they came back, they wanted to come right back to the group again because they missed the soldiering, they missed all of that stuff. So that's kind of how it started, how it came together. And of course, there's many aspects of our group. Not only do we do the reenactments, but we also provide a uniformed, accurate historical firing details for the war memorial in Washington Park in Portland. For their we do a 21 gun salute rifle volley for them every year. We've done multiple funerals at Willamette National Cemetery. We just did one for a Vietnam era Marine, and we dress head to toe in Marine Corps gear of Vietnam. Of course, all the flak vests were. I mean, it was everything, and we do it justice. And then of course we have parades that we are in, and then the Oregon Military Museum will contact me to provide a living history element for any of the displays and any of the things that they do in conjunction with the Oregon Army National Guard, which has just been, it's all just a huge honor.
When you reenact, let's say a battle, or do you actually, you know the people involved in that battle? Do you names, those kinds of things?
Oh, of the actual guys that were in the battle?
Yes.
No, very, very limited. Now, we do a specific unit that served in Vietnam.
Okay, I saw that. It's the 3rd Platoon of Delta Company?
Yeah, that's right. Second of the 5th, the Black Knights, 1st Cavalry, and we do primarily 1970 to 71. And we've had several Delta Company vets come out to some of our living history displays, and we've even had one of them come out to one of our tacticals, and he operated the talk, and so he ran radios and things like that. He came out in the bush a couple times with us, but you know, he was too old to hunt the bush anymore. But he was an RTO in Delta Company. He was a machine gunner in Delta Company for about 3 months, and then was transferred to Headquarters Company. He was with Captain Love, and he was his RTO in the CP section of Delta Company.
Okay.
And but he came out. He's from Jersey, and sadly passed away. That's the veteran, the Vietnam vet that is in our documentary that we were featured in.
Okay, I saw that. I saw the trailer of that. That looks pretty interesting. How long is that?
How long is the movie?
The documentary, yes.
Yeah, it's roughly an hour 20 minutes, I think, maybe an hour 30. It's a full feature, and it was one of the most rewarding things I've ever been involved in. To be honest with you, we had nothing to do with the editing or any of that. They just followed us for 3 years and put this thing together. And of course, it morphed. And I, you guys know Christopher Gaynor up there. He was an advisor for the film. They ran a lot of things by him. He's a Vashon native.
Right, and, I know Chris.
Yeah, yeah, and but it could have been done better. The directors were just, I think they were nailing it. When I was looking at kind of all the stuff they had done, the way they put the scenes together, the way they put, you know, really the nuts and bolts, tell the story of why we do what we do, because that's what it was about. And they got a different editor. She was up for an Academy Award, and she's a great editor, but because she wasn't so closely attached to the organization, and because the directors, they spent 3 years in the bush with us. So they spent the whole time in the bush. They crossed swamps, they crossed rivers, they ate the same crappy sea rations, they slept in the rain and the mud just like we did for 3 days.
Wow.
For 3 years in a row, right? But the editor didn't. And she put her kind of spin on it, and to be honest with you, we're all a little bit disappointed because we feel like it left a lot of questions answered. It was a little bit more artistic than it was really elementary, you know, where it's really showing it, you know, where it really shows what. But if you're a deep person, you can kind of look between the lines. You can see the story, but it's not blatant. It's not going to come out and hit you. But yeah, it's a great film, In Country. I'm very proud of it, and I think the directors are amazing. I think they did a great job with what they had and the direction they went. So
I haven't seen the whole movie. I have seen the trailer, and it looks pretty fascinating, that's for sure. And
yeah, they do a great interview with Bummy Baumgartner, who was the Delta Company veteran. They do a great interview with him in the movie, several. And then he passed away 3 months after the filming was finished. He never got to see the movie.
Is that right? Wow, that's too bad.
It really is.
Do you, you know, it's interesting. I have to admit, when I first heard about this, I kind of had a negative feeling. I'll be very honest with you.
About reenactment?
About this project that you're working on. Because I was thinking, you know, I've been interviewing vets and stuff, and I was thinking this may be too close. But I have to admit, after talking to you, I'm kind of turning around 180 degrees. I think it sounds like the things that you would need to be cautious about, maybe, you know, people have their own ability to participate in this or not. And I think probably for some, there is a tremendous amount of value in doing what you're doing. So Christopher was the one that told me that I should talk to you. And I think that this is pretty amazing. I appreciate the fact, too, that you're doing it, you know, very much from a historical perspective and as just as close to real life as you can. Have you got feedback I'm sure you've got a lot, I know you've got a lot of positive feedback. Is there negative feedback too? How do you address that if there is?
The only negative feedback we've ever received was from people that never served in Vietnam.
Yeah, yeah.
People that protested the war with this, like, you know, how dare you kind of a thing.
How dare you bring it up again kind of a...
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and my whole thing is this. It's like, okay, why is it okay why is it noble to reenact, and this is one of my quotes in the movie, why is it noble to reenact Civil War and World War II, but we don't reenact the Vietnam vets because it's too close to home or it's taboo? It's like, wait.
Yeah, you see, that was kind of my, I really have to admit, that was kind of my feeling. And I guess the fact that, I've really come close to some of these vets. And I think, you know, all the vets that I've worked with would probably really appreciate something like this. But, and I would too. But I really see what you're saying. It's also easier to criticize something that you know nothing about, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And we get that. But I got to tell you, you know, to finish on that quote, my point is this. By reenacting Civil War, we're just like honoring ghosts.
Yeah.
Why are we not honoring these guys while they're still alive now?
Yeah.
And this whole idea of it being taboo, why is it taboo? Most Vietnam vets I know are not ashamed of their service. As a matter of fact, they're very proud of it. They don't wear that Vietnam veteran hat because they're ashamed of it, and they shouldn't be ashamed. I'll tell you what right now, my organization, we will always fly, as long as there's air in my lungs, I will always fly the banner of the Vietnam vets. People talk about the greatest generation being the World War II generation. I'll tell you what, they were great. There's no question. But what about the guys that went to a war that was not popular and they went anyway?
Right.
What about the guys that went, guys, men and women, that served in an unpopular, ugly war, you know, and they went anyway?
You know, it's interesting. I was going to say, it's interesting.
Their job.
Interesting you mentioned that because of the statistics that I've looked at, you know, of the men that have served in Vietnam, about 85% say they are really glad that they did serve in Vietnam. They're glad that they served, not necessarily in Vietnam, but they're glad that they got the call that they served. And I think one gentleman that I interviewed that worked on Chinook helicopters said, I wouldn't trade the experience for $1 million, but I wouldn't want to redo it for $2 million. So, there's something to say about that. And, it just sounds to me like, it's a group of people that you say that are very, very dedicated to do these things correctly, very dedicated to do them sensitively, and I just think it's pretty amazing. Tell me about your two. You have a program every year where they go out and do the reenactment. Is that what occurs?
Yeah. So we have two tactical components that we do every year. We have our training event in May or early June. And I actually have a fully restored World War II Quonset hut on my property that is full of bunks and air-conditioned and heated with a full operational office and rifle racks. And so these guys come from all over the world and all over America, and I've got barracks for them to stay in. And we come and we do our training event in May or early June, and we have tons of classroom block instruction. Now, keep in mind, half my guys are either prior service or they're in right now. And so guys are trained on Vietnam-era tactics, soldiering, first aid, land nav, the whole experience. And I want to be clear about one thing. Unlike many other groups, our group, we do not reenact atrocities. We do not use those stupid, campy cliches. Everything happens very, very organically and very linearly. We don't let guys, guys don't take on a persona. You just be you. And you just act like a soldier and you be professional. And I'll be clear about one thing. The 1st Cav in Vietnam, among many other divisions in Vietnam, even in 1970 and 71, when war was winding down, was still an incredibly professional unit. They really were. They were money. And even the guys that didn't want to be there, they gave it all. And
sure.
And so that's the way we portray it. Like I said, we don't portray atrocity. We don't do the cliche, stupid things. Nothing scripted. So when the tactical comes in July, we have a huge motor pool of Vietnam era vehicles. We've got three Jeeps, we've got three three-quarter-ton trucks, and we've got a deuce and a half, and trailers for everything. So we convoy from my headquarters, my home, 11 miles to the battle site, and we have this great battle site that's right on the Willamette River, and the jungle is perfect there. And we rent the land from the state. for the weekend, and we have a full 24-hour, 3.5 days of tactical event. And when we go out into the bush, these guys from the training event have been completely trained up on how to be a rifle platoon, and they act accordingly. And we don't take a break in the middle of it and go back to the Winnebago or have a bunch of beers. Or it's from the second you're there, you're professional. Everybody that's been in the group, you come in as a private, and you work your way up. Every NCO, junior officer, and senior officer we have in the group, these guys have earned those ranks because of their aptitude, because of their dedication, and they act accordingly, and many are prior service.
Do you have dates? I was going to say, do you have dates for these things right now? For this year?
Yeah, we have our dates for July. Now, here's the other thing. These are things that are, we're in such remote locations that we don't have the public. They don't come out because you'd never be able to get there. And, you know, we're humping 80-pound rucksacks. Everything you have, you carry with you. And so we're very clear when people want to join the organization, it's not for the faint, it's not for the young at heart. You've got to be fit. You've got to be able to hump your weight. And if you can't, you can't participate out in the bush, because we've had heat casualties before. We've had guys that have twisted ankles. And there's no medevac coming to get you when you're 2 miles deep in the bush and uneven terrain, you know?
Yeah.
But, we're late July is when our event is this year. Mid to late July is our event date.
Well, that's tactical. You know what? I think that's great. And, Joel, I'm going to be in contact with you, with Chris. And I think that we're kind of running out of time here.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I think you've really turned me around on this. I'm pretty impressed. And
thank you. I wish we had more time, because there's so much more. You know?
Well, I know. Yeah, I know. And I'd like to, if I get down that way, I'd like to sit down and talk with you about it some more. And let's keep in contact too via email. And if you could. I'll be giving you another call after this, and let's get her done, and let's get some more publicity out for this. And I think it's a good deal. You get the Dr. Nurse's good housekeeping seal of approval on this. So
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. Thank you.
So thank you so much, Joel. I'd love to meet you in person. You take care.
Yeah.
Have a wonderful day, and everybody from Vashon is waving to you right now, and the whole island is tipping to the left side. So thank you very much, Joel. Right. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, great.
But it is increasingly clear to this report that the only rational way out then will be to negotiate, not as victors, but as an honorable people who lived up to their pledge to defend democracy and did the best they could.
April 30th, 1975 was the official end of the war in Vietnam. But to say it was the end of the war would not be giving all those who participated their earned respect. The collateral damage continues and causes suffering to this day. Dr. Steve Nurse, signing off.